I asked P.F. Allen if there was anything in particular she wanted me to say for her introduction. She wrote back this, and I quote, nothing too long. How's this? P.F. writes poetry and bangs her head against accounting, finance, and taxes in O'Fallon, Illinois. She is the creative force behind Snark Publishing's Moon Reader Poetry Magazine, now on hiatus, and the Snark Chapbook series that has published 54 chapbooks since 2003, including several by people in this room. P.F. is a this is an ongoing quote. P.F. is a hermit, secretly likes the color orange, and likes to watch Survivor Man in the dark middle of the night. She and her mother take turns admonishing each other not to work too hard. Neither listens. Robert R. Ward of Bellowing Arc Press, who published her first full-length of poetry, Surface Tension, in 2004, calls her latest work very Delphic stuff. End quote. I also asked our mutual friend, poet and editor, Joanne Lowry, if she thought there was anything I'd forgotten to say about P.F. Allen, and she wrote this, quote, I think she's an example of how wrong the general sentiment is that writers are selfish people only interested in their own pet writing projects. She devotes an awful lot of time, energy, and probably money to the publication of poetry that otherwise would never get published. Plus, she does a nice job. She's got an eye for design, and the chapbooks I've seen are always handsome and professional. That same visual sense is what gives her poetry such interesting images. End quote. Here's what I wrote after editing out everything that Joanne Lowry and P.F. Allen already said better. P.F. Allen's poems are strange and delicate little creatures, built almost entirely of images, veering somewhere between the funny and the surreal. A unique voice, quietly observant and meditative, dominates her work, some of my favorite being her Yellow Man poems, though I also like it when she lectures butterflies or writes from the point of view of the patron saint of your tortured existence. She often spurns punctuation and capitalization, though you wouldn't necessarily know this from hearing her read. P.F. is also the author of the chapbook Santa Rosa Syndrome, and her poems have appeared in Bellowing Arc, River King, Northwest Review, and Mid-America Poetry Review. Her work has also appeared in the anthologies Shaken and Stirred and New Century Poets. She probably thinks this introduction is too long. Maybe you do too. Oh well. Please welcome P.F. Allen.
Thank you. And thank you to Richard for inviting me. First of all, I'd like to read Santa Rosa Syndrome. And it is a term that I came up with about 20 years ago when I woke up in Santa Rosa, New Mexico with my mother and my sister, and we said, we have to get home. And so we drove from Santa Rosa, New Mexico to Creston, Iowa in one day. It took about 23 hours, but we got there. We just had to get home. So this poem I wrote shortly after the tsunami last year, Santa Rosa Syndrome. It's midnight. My ankle hurts from driving, crossing the Missouri River into Iowa. I woke up in Santa Rosa, New Mexico this morning, way before the sun pinked the sandy sky. Birds fly in formations pointing that way. Butterflies head northeast too. Something about the wobble of the earth says it. The spin is faster. Day is 3 millionths of a second shorter now. The galaxy wraps its new arm tighter, as if it were cold. Gravity and the strong magnetic force call to me. What would be east in space? Toward the rising sun? An earthquake rattles the bones of Mother Teresa, not so far, far away. Rings the big blue bell. Earth's a clapper. One of the tones is water. Call it Santa Rosa Syndrome, this urge for home at any cost. We all have it. I have that itch sometimes. The middle of the night, glowing green like alarm clock numbers. It calls now in the foggy midnight, thinking of those tide-swept beaches, sunny there in 80 degrees. how it feels to be carried out to sea on vast swells of God's aqua, longing for home. This next one is called Handle with Care, and I wrote it for a reading last fall, about, well, a year ago. And it's a Yellow Man poem, and I have a series of Yellow Man poems. I think I have about 80 of them. And Yellow Man is sort of an everyman. He's not like Marvin Bell's Dead Man, where he knows Marvin Bell very well. He's actually you and me, or some variation thereof. And this poem is called Handle with Care. It's the autumn of surprises, with leaves lying like frosting spread across the birthday cake of Yellow Man's yard. He's a hypocrite, and he knows it. At least he's honest. He lies in a hammock in the shade of red and yellow and thinks of his little boxes of dirt, Texas ochre, black sand. Would a museum take his dirt collection when he dies? Should he donate his body to science? He imagines an anatomy student cutting his sad corpse. Maybe he should get a tattoo that says, "Handle with care." Maybe a sky burial where the birds take his body away. They would respect him, lavish his body with love while they ate. Death and fall just seem to go together, like D.H. Lawrence wrestling in sex. Two eggs wreck 'em, Adam and Eve on a raft. Superman hides behind a tree in the cemetery. It's not a surprise. St. Paul is mine, saith Yellow Man, a good Jewish boy sadly misunderstood. Paul only wants to climb up through the hole in the sky. He is a strange soul, and wandering is still aberrant behavior. Yellow Man follows him with sticks and letters. Hell is never a surprise, Yellow Man tells him. You'll find hell if you're looking for it, like the cougar prowling the banks of the Nishnabotna River finds the hunter. Harvest moon shines full over Yellow Man, over the rolling sea. The rainbow, the moon through stained glass windows. Yellow Man has a dream. St. Paul tiptoes up his roof, pokes his head through his bedroom window. Neither is in the mood for fireworks. Conjure this picture of fall, harvest moon, fireworks, picnic with cougar and red Texas dirt, birds and river, Yellow Man and D.H. Lawrence, Superman and St. Paul eating egg sandwiches. Say a prayer softly to the night god. Call her Yahweh or Jesus, Buddha or Muhammad. Call him Bacchus. Call him Quetzalcoatl, whatever. Pray that we all have a little tattoo that says, "Handle with care," and that we all take it to heart. This next one is a relatively short poem. I wrote it the day a friend of mine died of breast cancer, and it's called The Happy Aspect of Poison Sumac. What's the itch tell you? This sap stings. A walk through thistled woods. Mockingbirds sing from invisible librettos, rotating the clear text. You will never find the key, crawling in a deep cave. The interstate cloverleaf started as a crop circle. You should have seen the first one, a young warrior sacrificed at the temple. A horse with watermelon eyes. Watch it fade away, this fresh. It's a tug of war, a great straining rope. Gaze upon the sky, yet still a sinner. Find your own broken way. Your own mushroom-strewn cul-de-sac. The midwife helps you climb where you need to go. This next poem is one that I wrote after Marvin Bell's In Stings, and it's probably the most autobiographical poem that I've ever written. Each line in the first line of each stanza is from his poem. In Stings. The things I did because of trees. The trees that grew in the grove and dropped their berries when we couldn't pick them all. Mulberries that clung like ideas to dirty feet. because the cedars dropped their berries in the yard, because butter eased the pain of a sparkler burn, because it was okay to shake up your pop and spray half of it across the yard, because tadpoles dropped in mud puddles grew frogs when it rained, because bike chains come off when everyone is watching, because you have to hide behind a tree when a car goes by, because everyone's dad plays horseshoes in his underwear. The things I did, I counted in nuns that came and went, in asphalt smells of spring, in dandelions picked from the convent yard and redeemed for candy, in morning sun through stained glass windows, in drives to Des Moines to the Veterans Hospital, in funerals, in spelling bees and honeybees and bumblebees, in stings, in the pink Fibonacci spiral of a shell, in wondering how many days a medical student dissects a cadaver and how they store it until it comes home in a little bronze urn that they bury, in stars that look down and watch you like dead Indians in the crib or grizzly bears in the closet, in peas picked from the garden, eaten fresh, in the theory of strawberry seeds in the expanding universe. The things I counted beyond the finish like a cribbage game with a 20-point hand, you skunk, double skunk, in trees you climb too high and can't get down, in cats with missing feet and barns that burn, and you stand and watch lit cinders drift on raindrops until the hole where the barn has been feels like a tooth the dentist pulled, your tongue will worry raw. You try to hide the holes or sew them back together, the holes where barns have burned and teeth have pulled and urns are buried, the holes with missing cat feet. You tie it all together with string and stars and ideas that cling like mulberries to dirty feet. And the next few are Yellow Man poems again. This one is kind of a very painful poem, I guess, for Yellow Man. It's called Chest Pain. Yellow Man's chest hurts this afternoon. Perhaps it's his secret dead twin connected to his sternum. Maybe the turtle by his house snapped too hard, a pushing aside at the football game, slighted by God's physics when time comes unstuck. Yellow Man is a poem, spitting tobacco juice into pop bottles. Almost sunrise, the wind and the waves in the hurricane storm surge. Hurricane Yellow Man, Cat 5, the Weather Channel will follow him all night long. Yellow Man comes back. He is like a planet rolling around the black bowl of time and space, like gravity's marbles, like commas scattered on the morning wind. Yellow Man is the moon. He is not the moon. He rises in the night and cannot sleep. His voice falls like water over full eaves troughs. His ears do not match. The left one is higher. Yellow Man is the cool granite of graves. He is Superman hiding behind the cemetery tree at your grandmother's grave, watching the burial, making sure, is she there yet? He remembers the smell of her pies. The dirt makes his fingertips itch. Leaves hang heavy, remembering the plums he stole. Now he lives, wrapped in plastic, whispers the melting snow. Green grass sues for room. Shadows watching rabbits. No wonder his heart hurts. This next one is a Yellow Man poem that came from my visit to New Orleans about 3 or 4 years ago. There was a fellow on the street, one of the street performers, that played music on glasses, and he would fill them to different levels and play the rims. And this poem is called Wind and Saucer Music, and that's where the image came from. Yellow Man plays water glasses on the street for spare change. Glass half full, middle C. People tip better to Blue Danube. His fingers have strange calluses. Home at night, he plays pop bottles. Old 10-ounce Cokes. Sits them on his balcony, listens to the wind. He dreams atonal dreams. Nightmares of the pulse of a black hole. Songs of spheres. The music of flying saucers. And this one I was hesitant to read because it's kind of naughty, But Richard insisted that I probably should read it. It was written for a former colleague of mine, and it's called Reading Yellow Man's Palm. Long lifeline with several layers of skin ripped out at the end. He caught his hand on a nail on the wall. It's healing now. He's lucky. He has enough white cells to live a long life. What's that soft mound called, the fat of the hand? What about that pink dog he calls God, the one he lets run without a leash? His hand loves doggy. Doggy leads yellow man around. What can he do except drink too much and follow him? And this next one is one that occurred to me when I was working on some books. Several of my books that I've published for people are the perfect band rather than the saddle stitch. Saddle stitch is the ones that are stapled. Perfect bound, you have to fold every page and then pad them with a padding machine and then glue the covers on. And I glue the covers on with contact cement. And if you glue the covers on in the wintertime with the windows shut, then after a while, things start occurring to you. So this one is called gluing with the window, or gluing when the window is shut. Yellow man looks up at the low ceiling, remembers the sky. An asteroid passed within 27,000 miles of Earth yesterday. He knows, he felt it, even before CNN. The room smells like the stamps from old love letters and playbills. The door hangs open. He is unsure whether he was coming in or going out. That glue. There's a sound in the distance like a first Monday siren. A distant early warning. He hopes it's not Bright Eyes, the Fresnel beacon that sings. He prays for Jesus or Lao Tzu or Muhammad to save him. The terrible daisies of sky seen from above. This next one is one that I wrote over the last couple of weeks. I like to make it a practice to read something that I've written recently, and this is the most recent poem I've written. It's called Last Man Clapping. Ever the empiricist, I tested that axiom of quantum mechanics. Observing something changes it. At age 5, when I took apart my Fisher-Price TV. The moon's an ovary in the night sky. It sings the song of 3 degrees Kelvin, and the universe hums along. It all began with an elaborate root system with dendrons this way and that, and somehow with wood and a big saw and hammer and nails I was composing a poem, a big money poem, a famous poem to which many had already subscribed and agreed to put on film. Harrison Ford would star, and I wasn't even finished with the poem yet. When they applauded, who would be the last man clapping? Reaching up for Dad's hand at the bus stop, 3 little girls standing wrapped with him in his long coat. He foretold who'd be on the bus. The old lady up by the driver, thin arms clutching her patent leather purse to her chest. The creepy guy in the back. Now you know. There's always an old lady. She always sits in front, always clutches her purse. The bus, by default, is always late. Creeps aren't hard to find. What's the etiquette of being alone? In the dark, you forget. You are a shadow on a cafe wall, drinking shadows of coffee. Everything you see is an apparition. It shines brightly, waves gassy spiral arms that smell of lavender and dogs. Emits high energy rays before the black hole sucks it in. The moon itself smells of wet ashes, and the erstwhile mermaid walks gingerly on shards of glass. She has forgotten the taste of the sea, peeking through heaven's keyhole. Whales listen on the sea's sound channel. They hear all over the planet. They know what's going on. Daddy's little girl dances on his toes. He tries to make Christmas for the whole world. A rain gauge ain't gonna help. I am the purple whore of Babylon, and so are you. Monkeys with laptops Write the story of Armageddon. Study on it. Find out the effect of the Great Depression on power steering. Know the dead live forever. Be that one, that last man clapping. There's a tracheotomy with your name on it. Be Dismas or Gestus, the good thief or the bad. It doesn't matter, as long as your car has crisp handling. We're here in the wilderness. Gray cumulus threaten in the west. It's a sign of good things to come. This next poem is called The Charles Darwin Effect, and my friend Joanne that quoted me so, or gave me such compliments, and I have been throwing poems back and forth occasionally, and I started a series of Charles poems, and one of them was Charles Whitman, the tower sniper from Austin, and this one is Charles Darwin, and it's not actually about him, it's just using his name in vain, I guess. The smell of her gunpowder perfume makes him sleep. It's been a long day. Like Sisyphus, he dreams of rocks instead of claws. Dreams tomorrow's weather, steroids from the sky. He regrets the tornadoes they didn't make together. He loves her fine eyes, her monkey eyes, simian grapes to eat the light, frilly hinged doors with fire axes stored behind. Time is crushed like garlic bread, like fine paste spread on toast. Do not push. Are we there yet? Behold, he remembers the premonitions of trees, the last look at the snow-covered moon, poisoned slowly from the elbow out. This next poem is... the images were taken from the story about a farmer over in southern Illinois who poisoned blackbirds on his son's farm. He laced the corn with furadan and killed 27,000 blackbirds, or 26,000, I guess, which is not much better. This one is called Settling Blackbirds. Hope is a B-52 broken apart at the bottom of Baffin Bay with four hydrogen bombs on board. Yellow man has a plutonium core. He can't sleep. The mattress aches. The moon shines in his window. Birds are unsettled in their nests, make early morning sounds. He laces his night with furadan, kills the blackbirds in the field of his sleep. All 26,000 caw, fly, settle, eating the corn of his dreams. And this is the last poem, and it came from a workshop that I had in Iowa City a couple of years ago. We were assigned the project of writing about our death, either as some sort of final thing or ongoing thing, or just the moment of your death. And I had already done that, so I did it from another perspective. And this one is called Some Dark Evening on My Way. He waits for me, slouching a black hooded sweatshirt under the bridge. Face is shadowed by the waning Sunday moon. Says to me, "You haven't slept on the beach yet. You should do that tonight." Truck Jake brakes on the interstate overhead, scares pigeons. They flap and land. We walk to the beach. The moon peppers the water. Fire burns in the 55-gallon drum. Flickers his eyes. Jimmy Buffett sings far away. His dark dog sniffs my hand in a friendly way, like he already knows my smell. I pat his head. Thank you.